It's best that any reader starts from the first chapter, builds that foundation from the basic terms to understanding financial statements, and then building further on that knowledge, and then getting on to financial analysis, budgeting, forecasting, management accounting versus financial accounting, and then heading into that last chapter.
Hello there, and welcome to the My Future Business Show. This is the show that gets you in front of your best audience and keeps you there. I hope you're doing wonderfully well, and I just wanted to take a second of pause to thank you for joining us and for supporting the show. It's great to again have you here joining us today. Now, on today's show, I have the pleasure of welcoming best-selling author, podcast host, and CFO, Shehan Sheriff. Welcome to the show, Shehan.
Thank you, Rick. Thank you for having me on your show.
Thank you for joining me, Shehan. Now, you and I are going to be talking about your latest book called Accounting Fundamentals, A Non-Finance Manager's Guide to Finance and Accounting. Now, prior to the call, I touched briefly on your extensive background. I was going through your bio and I was really, really impressed with, the studious nature of your background. We're going to be talking about that momentarily. But prior to that, we always take a bit of time, Shehan, to learn a little bit about you. So where are you calling in from today?
I'm in Dubai. Originally from Sri Lanka, but have been living and working in Dubai since 2008.
You know what? That place blows my mind. I remember seeing time-lapse pictures where there was just a beach, and now there's this metropolis of expansive, beautiful buildings and architecture and layouts. What's the most exciting part of it for you?
I think it's the visionary leadership. I mean, how they've transformed this place just from sand to what it is today. It's been an incredible journey. I mean, people who come like to Dubai, say after about a period of 2 years or 3 years, see a massive change, which you would never see in any other part of the world. So that's been the transformation, and that's been the story of Dubai, which has been great. And the way they take care of people, you know, the quality of life, here is great. I mean, I don't think you can match it with any other part of the world.
That's incredible. Look, you know, and the palm trees for islands, there must be some wickedly skilled individuals over there. Who's some of the people that you admire that live in the local area over there?
In terms of the local area, I mean, in terms of the as a country, I really admire the leadership. But in terms of the people here, I mean, every person here is different. I mean, there's people living here from every nationality in the world, pretty much. So almost, more than 190 countries in the world. So each person is diverse, and there's so much that you could learn from each and every person. And that also helps that multicultural society, you learn from different societies, different cultures. Mm. So I think put anyone over the other, but I think there's a contribution from each and every person here, from the garbage collector to, you know, the top ranked CEO to everyone's got some respect and, they're contributing very well towards the success story of Dubai and the UAE.
When you talk about the success story of Dubai, Shehan, I always think about the things that I've seen on the television. Unfortunately, I've not been able to make my way there yet, but I know that it's always hot. And one thing that struck me is that you have this, maybe you have multiples of them, but indoor snow arenas. Is that true?
That's right, yes. Right now the weather is, it's lovely, honestly. But the hot times are coming ahead. The summer starts from about June, July onwards. There are about 4 or 5 months which is pretty hot, but other than that the weather is good. But it's mostly, I mean, as long as you're mostly indoors during that summer period, especially during the day, mornings and nights are okay, or at least manageable. But during the day in that peak summer period, as long as you're indoors, you're fine, because every building has got AC. And
it seems to be a common story around the world, doesn't it? Now tell me a little bit about growing up. Where did you grow up?
I was born and brought up in Colombo in Sri Lanka, until I was about 23, 24 years, I did all my studies there. I started my first job there. So yes, memories back from Sri Lanka.
Now, I know, you have a very studious background. Does that give you much time for hobbies and recreations and sports? What do you enjoy doing?
So in terms of hobbies and sports, I love watching tennis, football and cricket. These are the three sports that I really love. But given my priorities of late, especially publishing the book. I don't have much free time, to be honest. But, yeah, whenever I get an opportunity, those are the things that I generally spend.
I love playing cricket. I actually used to play a lot of turf cricket, but I also enjoy indoor cricket. Is that a thing where you live?
Yes, it is. Back in Sri Lanka, I mean, cricket is like a craze. It's more than a sport, to be honest. And even I did play it for some time. I mean, of course, just for a club.
Club cricket, and, yeah.
Yes, club cricket. And a bit for school. I mean, not representing school, but there were like house matches and stuff.
Yeah.
Which I played for. And then after moving here, I didn't play, but I follow cricket a lot.
So what do you think you are? You're a better bowler or batter? What's your thing?
I'm a better bowler, but I'm an all-rounder.
Yeah, yeah.
But a bowling.
Fantastic. I love these sorts of, I love this part of the call, Shahan, because it gives me some insight into the people behind the business and the book. So I really do appreciate it. Now, tell me, you were talking about Sri Lanka where you grew up there. Were times tough when you were growing up? Tell us a little bit about your childhood.
It was super tough because there was a war that was going on one end, and people were living out of absolute fear because there were bombs that were being thrown at it. I mean, on various days at various times. I myself have seen a few bombs that have taken place. Whilst I was at school, you know, there was a bombing that took place just next to our school. I've seen people run out of fear, you know, terrified seeing certain things, you know, people dying on the spot.
Wow.
And we've been watching these stuff on TV, seeing these on newspapers and seeing it live at some certain situations. So, it was a very different environment growing up in Sri Lanka. But on the other hand, the beauty of Sri Lanka is unmatchable, I guess, because it's got so much of natural beauty, so much of natural, like rivers, streams, and so on. So, and the greenery, I mean,
amazing.
Those tend to give you, relieves your stress, basically. And, you know, so you have to both these things on both spectrums. And, you know, it was a balance between these two on how we lived our lives. But, it was a very enjoyable period as well, given that the entire family was there. And I mean, on my side of things, I've got quite big families on both my sides, mother's side and father's side. So
yep.
You tend to move a lot in terms of, you know, whether it's functions, whether it's gatherings. So it was, I mean, we were very united as well as a family. So that helped a lot to overcome these difficult situations whenever there was something that took place.
So there must have been a significant cultural shift from Sri Lanka through to where you are now. Tell us a little bit about the differences, and are there any commonalities?
In Sri Lanka as well, it's a multicultural country. So had majority Buddhists and Sinhalese, but there was quite a lot of Muslims, Tamils and Christians as well. So that's the commonality between Sri Lanka and Dubai or the UAE, where it's a multicultural environment.
Yeah.
But in terms of the differences, I guess, unfortunately, for whatever reason, I think it's that visionary leadership that's missing back in Sri Lanka.
Right.
And for like 70 plus years, it's been like two different parties that have ruled the country. And unfortunately, it's division. Not the place that most people envision that the country has gone into. So there could have been so many changes that were implemented, but unfortunately, the country is where it is. But at least on a positive note, over the last 1-2 years post-COVID, I think the country was probably at the lowest point since independence. And I think since then, at least looking positively, I think things have improved quite well. And
quite a bit.
The hope is that, you know, things continue to improve this way. So
that's, well, I love that. I love the fact that you've mentioned hope, because it tells me a lot about mindset and, you know, your visions for the future. Tell me, what do you think about the importance of mindset? I know that you're very studious, and it gets me to thinking, how is somebody so committed to achieving so many goals that you have thus far, which I'd like you to share with us in a moment, you know, some of those qualifications. But does mindset play a part in, you know, staying committed?
Absolutely. To me, honestly, mindset is everything. So whether you listen to Tony Robbins or to Dean Graziosi or to Alex Hormozi or to any of these prominent speakers, motivational, yeah, inspirational or coaches, one thing they say is it's 80% about mindset And it's 20% about the tools and the hows and the whys and so on. So if you have a great mindset, learning anything isn't an obstacle. And there was also a book that I read a few years ago by a brain coach by the name of Jim Quick. The book's title is Limitless.
Yep.
And in that book, he goes on to explain, you know, the functionality of the brain and the mindset and, you know, how you could learn anything. So in back in school, you know, each of us, we've learned so many different subjects, so many different areas. But one thing that we've not learned is how to learn. And, you know, that also goes with, you know, having a strong mindset. So to me, answering your question, mindset is everything to me. And thankfully, I've been able to have a great mindset. I've been able to stay focused and organized. And I think that's the result that's coming out today that, you know, I've been able to publish my book and achieve bestseller ranking. Thankfully, with the help of so many individuals and people in my life, including my parents, my family, and so on. And also, it helps me to focus on the next big things that I want to achieve, breaking the boundaries that I've had, you know, then achieving that next level of success. So that's the target, at least. But in order to do all of that, you need to have a great mindset, for sure.
Absolutely. Great feedback. Thank you so very much. Now, I touched a little earlier, Shahan, on your extensive educational, you know, professional background, qualifications and so forth. I'm wondering, for the sake of context, if you'd be able to share some of those significant qualifications with the audience.
Yeah, sure. So I was never a person who was into studies when I was young, but something that triggered, you know, the difficult time that we had in life during my ordinary levels, that was the transformative period in my entire life, looking back.
Yeah.
In terms of finances, we were kind of low. So that, and as the eldest in a family of three, it was my responsibility that I had to put up my hands up and, you know, do something about it. So in low double digit figure marks, is where I was at when I was in year nine. And from there on, once I started focusing and with a strong determination, my marks started to improve term on term, to the extent that I got some really good results during my ordinary level, which I then carried on, and that gave me the confidence to, you know, continue my education even further. So in the advanced level stream, I achieved very good results as well.
Yeah,
I got admitted into the National University, which is a very rare occurrence. There's only a number of people who get admitted. For whatever reason, unfortunately, my father had a bypass surgery. So I had to, not intentively, but I had to look at working as well during that period. So with that focus, I lost focus on my education at that point because I had to be the breadwinner in the family.
Of course.
So I was not able to complete like two subjects in my final year. I know it sounds very strange, very silly, like having attended 4 years in the university. But that was the regret that I then carried subsequently. And then I motivated myself back again to get into studies. So I completed a qualification called CIMA from the UK, Chartered Institute of Management Accountants.
Yep.
I then completed the CPA Australia qualification and membership. And then I got into an MBA, a Master of Business Administration, which was a general qualification, not a specialized one, but a general MBA.
Yep.
And then a few years later, I did another Master of Business Administration qualification on artificial intelligence and data science. I know nowadays everyone is talking about AI and data science.
Oh, how timely. But this was
like 3 years prior to the entire ChatGPT and all this talk that came up. I think that was a very useful qualification that I did. I learned a lot of different things. And after that, I still wanted to further pursue my education. And there was only one thing that my mother asked me before she passed away of cancer 3 years ago.
Mm.
And that was a doctorate. And like just a month and a half before she passed away, I enrolled into the program. I'm now halfway through that.
Oh, wow.
So I'm pursuing my doctorate program, which I really want to do and complete. You know, that was the only thing that she ever asked me.
Oh.
And
that's incredible, you know, because I remember walking across the stage, you know, tipping your hat and all the rest of it. And, you know, that moment in time when you walk across that stage, you're going to be so proud of your the achievements and the fact that your mum will be watching you. How long away are you?
I'm halfway through. Right at the end of the first phase. So the next phase is where I have to complete my own research and thesis. So I'm just finishing up the first phase of it. There's just two more modules to be completed. And aside from the doctorate, I also enrolled into more than 100, 200 other courses in various different topics, whether it's from email marketing to accounting to finance to time management, stress management, you name it. Summits and so on. So I've been to many of them, but for me, honestly, education is a passion and it never stops. There's no age barrier, you know, there's no time. You can do it any day, anytime, at any age.
That's fantastic. Well, it's funny because there's lots of times where I felt like just chucking in the towel and not continuing to study. How do you motivate yourself? Do you ever get to the point? I know you just talked about it being a passion, but what would you tell other people that are aspiring to be better than what they are, but they struggle with study?
I think it's all about building great habits. And with that, I think there was another great book that I read a few years ago called Atomic Habits by James Clear, I think.
It's great book.
And that's a great book. It really helps you inculcate great habits, especially the morning routine and any other habits that you need to be a great person. So it's small things, but it all adds up end of the day. And you know, the more that you practice a habit, you know, each day, it's like on autopilot. It becomes normal. That's how it's explained in the book, and that's how it is in practice as well, from whatever I've practiced. So I've been doing a number of things in terms of morning rituals to you know, other habits, even drinking more water, and there are a few basic things like this. So all these things have helped me to stay focused, have a great mindset, think of my ambitions, set up goals and work towards those goals, and breaking each goal into small daily simple steps, basically. So people get overwhelmed by thinking of a massive goal that they set up, and that's when, like, most people set up their goals at the beginning of the year, you know, in January everyone's busy setting up their goals. But like right now in March, I don't think even half or a majority of them may have even forgotten what their goals were. Come December, they again try to reflect, you know, okay, I've not achieved most of these again, and this goes on year after year. So for me, I set up goals. I break them down into quarterly, monthly, and daily actionable steps, and I follow them. And I've also journaled. I mean, because I journal a lot, you know, it helps me to stay focused and monitor and measure where I am on a daily basis. So there's a popular quote which goes by, you know, what gets measured gets managed. So if you don't measure your progress where you are, you will never be able to manage it. So for me, that's been standing true, and you know, I've been practicing that.
Yeah, great feedback. Thank you so very much. Now, you talked a little bit about, you know, that routine. I'm wondering, are you an early riser? What's a day look like for you, Sean?
I never used to be an early riser, but it so happens that I need to wake up early to drop my son to school. And then, you know, I don't go to the gym. I never used to go to the gym as well previously, but now on and off, at least I go to the gym. I prefer walking, but either of these, you know, I think is a good daily habit.
Yeah.
I've not been doing it daily, to be honest, but at least on and off, if you can do it, or even some form of exercise or physical activity that can keep you, that can start your day off well, is a good habit to start off with. And plus drinking
lots of water
right at the start of the day.
Yeah.
And the other thing that I've been doing is trying to handle the toughest task right at the beginning of the day. And this is something that Jim Quick also mentions very often, trying to, you know, do that first, that toughest thing first thing in the day.
Yep.
And aside, there's also a few other things, like, you know, when you stay focused on certain tasks, try to avoid multitasking. Up until maybe 2 years prior, you used to think that, you know, multitasking will increase my efficiency, but it's not the case. I mean, I've tried it and tested it, and it really is the case. So if for example, just to give a very simple example, if I tell somebody to write numbers from 1 to 10 and then ask them to write the alphabet from A to Z separately, and if you time them and calculate it, you'll arrive at a lower time versus asking them to write one A to B and so on, you know, just that. So it's a very simple exercise, which I did when I was reading the book of Jim Quick and followed some of his courses. And it really struck my mind, you know, that multitasking isn't really actually helping you, because the mind doesn't work that way. Mind is not set up that way. Mind is set up to work on one task at a time. So that's something I've avoided. And it helps to reduce the stress. So that's another habit that I follow. And another thing that I also do is try to take regular breaks. So there's something called the Pomodoro technique, where, you know, for about every half an hour. So different speakers give different timelines, but the one that I follow is like for every half an hour. So if I take like a 2 to 3 minute break, at least, you can go up to even 5 minutes. That helps you, you know, stay focused once you get back again. But otherwise, if you're like sitting right throughout for about 1 hour, 2 hours, 3 hours, you know, you don't become efficient. You don't end up being very productive staying that long.
Thank you for the feedback. Love it. Now, you earlier touched on your son and dropping him off to school. Now, as a father myself, I always think about legacy. I always think about how can I, you know, help my sons be better in every way than I am today. What do you think is the one most important lesson that you would like to leave for your son or your children?
Yes, so the most important lesson is to stay honest to yourself. There are so many people looking at you, and there are so many people you want to impress and so on. But as long as you can stay honest to yourself, I think there's nothing else that matters, to be honest. Yeah. And when you say staying honest to yourself, then that'll help you stay focused. That'll help you stay. That'll help you to achieve your goals, to be committed, dedicated. All these things will come subsequently. But I think if you can stay honest to yourself and do the best that you can and be the best version of yourself, there's nothing like that.
That's all you different can ask people for. Have
different, yeah, different people have different capabilities. But end of the day, if each of us as human beings can be the best version of ourselves, I think the world will be a much better place.
Now, it's interesting because I know that you used to dislike accounting and now you're an accountant. I know you've told me a little bit about the story, but was there a battle inside your mind having to go from someone who didn't like this to liking it?
It was an absolute frustration, to be honest. And that came about because I missed the first few lessons in my class when I chose accounting as a subject.
Yeah.
And the thing is, there were a few optional subjects. I can't remember from which subjects I had to choose it from, but this was an optional subject. So I chose accounting. And I thought I'll enjoy it because it was numbers and I loved maths and so on.
Yeah.
But then I fell sick. I think it was just a flu, and a few weeks I was off from school. And I think it was just the basics that were taught during that period. And as with most subjects, if you lose the basics, whatever comes after that, it sounds like
you miss it.
Especially with accounting, the moment you lose that very basic fundamentals like the debits and the credits and, you know, everything else sounded like Greek to me. So, it built a lot of frustration in me, not just for accounting, but even on my other subjects. It really demotivated me. So that can happen with any subject or any learning for anyone. You know, one thing can put you off even in life. You know, a single thing in a particular day can put you off for the rest of the day. So it's important that it doesn't, but practically that's something that can happen to anyone. So that really put me off in terms of my education. My marks started deteriorating, and there came a point that, you know, I really wanted to solve this issue, because my marks were just heading only one way, which was down, unfortunately. So there was one day that I really keenly focused on and made a key decision that I really wanted to transform this. And I think, yes, I was able to do that, thankfully.
See, that's the thing about commitment, isn't it? Thank you again for sharing, Sharon. Now, just so that we understand, because the people that are listening to this episode today may not have a background in accounting and finance. So I'm wondering, from a very fundamental level, what's the difference between finance and accounting?
So if you think of art and science, right, accounting tends to look at the past, and it's more like a science.
Right.
Whereas finance is more like an art and is more futuristic. So When we talk about accounting, we talk about how much was spent last month, how much of profit did we achieve in the last month or the last year. Whereas when it comes to finance, we talk about forecasting our cash flows for the next year. We talk about expecting a profit for the next 3 years to 5 years. And in a very basic way, this is the difference.
So history versus the future.
Yeah.
Thank you very much for sharing. Now, you talk a lot about automation in your field. Is that an important thing?
I think it's not only an important thing in finance, but it's starting to become an important area in every segment, in every area of work, in life, and in every area, basically. So whether it's from health to, you know, business administration, to managing a company, to even managing your own day-to-day tasks, I think it's increasingly becoming a big part of each one's lives. I know there are a few advocates who don't like a lot of automation, probably my wife included.
Yeah.
but I'm really seeing it move in that direction.
Yeah.
And I think it's yes, there are certain areas where automation can be a bad thing, but I think as long as you understand where you can use it most effectively and to help you become more productive, I think those are the areas that one should really focus on and look to implement them. So whether it's even when you're typing an email, you know, there are so many softwares out there. You can just hit a button and it'll draft your reply. Yeah. I mean, just if you just give it a small description, you know, this is what you want to say, and it'll draft you like an entire paragraph or
it's
two,
crazy,
three paragraphs.
Yep.
Entire reply. So you don't even have to do that. You can even automate your email replies through ChatGPT and Zapier. I've taken a number of AI related courses. So I've come across so many different tools. Then even this podcast that we're doing, you know, after the podcast, if I have access to the recording, I can just download it, upload it to a tool, and it'll break it down into maybe 15 to 20 different reels. And
yes,
I can then upload them onto different social media platforms or even schedule it. I don't have to upload
it
then.
It's very interesting. What's the software that you use to do that?
It's a tool called Vidyo, VIDYO is what I recall. If you just Google it, you should.
VIDYO.
Yes, that's right.
Fantastic. Because I'm right into that, but I always think to myself, one half of me, Shahan, says I'm really excited about AI, but the other, I'm terrified. Where do you sit on that spectrum?
I'm excited, to be honest. Mm-hmm. And I've started to use it for a lot of things, not for writing my books. Recently, for whatever reason, I received one review by someone who had purchased my book saying that this is an entirely ChatGPT written book, which is not the case. I've even received my copyrights. So I know there are so many authors there who write books with ChatGPT, but I haven't still gone to that level.
No.
But in terms of automating a lot of other things, if someone has purchased a book, you know, triggering that into updating it into a Google Sheet and updating certain information, those kind of automations is what I'm doing. And like what I said about videos being broken into different reels, having the transcriptions generated for those videos, even the descriptions for those reels to be published on social media. I mean, those kind of stuff I'm okay with, and I'm excited and looking forward to in terms of further developments in those areas. But yeah, it's a bit of a divided opinion at the moment among most people, but I think it's a debate that will get settled over the next few months, given how extensively most of these companies are investing further into AI, and it's becoming part of each and every tool, whether it's Google Meet to Zoom. You know, there are different ways in which they use AI. So, and like I said, every part of life, even health, AI is
everywhere. Well, it's funny, Shahan. I think that human beings are the ultimate intelligence, whether or not they want to acknowledge it or not. And I think that teamwork and working together in a business is critically important to achieve, you know, real world results. And put aside AI, tell us a little bit about teamwork in your environment and how important it is.
Yeah, for me, teamwork has always been an important part, whether it's in life or whether it's at work. So at home, it was a family of us, me, my brother and sister, and my parents. So whatever we did at home, it was all based on teamwork. Whatever we did in at work, at home, or whether it was at work. So it was at work when I just a few examples. One was at my first job, which was at a company, which was at the premium blue chip company in Sri Lanka called John Keel's Holdings. I was in charge of sorting out the annual report for the award. So basically, there's a chartered accountancy award that's being given out every year. And all the blue chip companies apply for that award. And I was made in charge of, you know, sorting it out in that particular year. And as a team, I think, it was, even though I was made in charge, and I evaluated a number of different annual other similar competitor annual reports, and we came up with, you know, certain deficiencies that prevailed in our annual report and areas that we could further improve on. It was more about a team. There were a number of days that we worked very late, like even like 1-2 o'clock in the morning during that 1-2 week period. But when we worked as a team, there were so many suggestions that came up that nobody of us individually thought of. But when we worked as a team, they all came up together for somehow, like almost magically, which we then implemented, and we achieved the best annual report award in our industry in that particular year. And that was like for the first time that it happened in a number of years. So that kind of really showed me that, you know, teamwork means a lot. And it's like 1+1 is greater than 2. That's the synergy that we talk about, right? When you come in as a team together. And likewise, even at my current work, it's more about a teamwork culture that we have. So whether it's the finance team or whether it's the operations team, we all come together and make certain decisions on a weekly basis, sometimes on a daily basis in terms of making those critical decisions. And we have regular catch-ups as a team. So I think the more that you are oriented towards a team, it will help you achieve your own goals, plus achieve the team's goals as well. So it's when you have this disconnect that you kind of become stressed out, and nobody achieves anything at that moment, and it's not a win-win situation. So end of the day, we as human beings always look to want to achieve a win-win situation. And that's one of the key elements that's also mentioned in the book, The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. If you haven't read that book, I think that's another great book. And in that book, it talks about, you know, these win-win situations. So I think a win-win situation can easily be achieved if you focus on teamwork and work as part of a team. That's why I like team sports as well.
You're very inspirational. I see so many great foundational pillars that you've created for your own life, and it must be enlightening and motivational for those that are working around you, and it's a real credit to you. Now, I'd love to know, Sean, how did you get to be featured on ABC, NBC, Fox, USA Today, CBS, and others? That's a massive achievement.
Yes. So as soon as I achieved the bestseller ranking, I published a media release, and then I got picked out through LinkedIn by somebody. And then I published a number of media releases back then. And I think it's more to do with the book and the achievements that I've been able to achieve subsequent to it that has resulted in all of this publicity. But all of this publicity, you know, you could gain it one day, you could lose it another day. So as long as we don't get carried away with that and it affects our ego, as long as we do good things and do the right things the right way, you know, these things will come. And I always believe these are results of your hard work and not something that are just short term and temporary. So that's the bigger picture that I look at. Yes, it's nice to have all these media releases and stuff, but end of the day, I just want to do the good stuff that I know of and try to help people as much as possible in my capacity in the way that I could.
I'd love to take a bit of a deep dive into the book, but prior to that, I wonder if it actually helps, you know, managers and just general sort of line level people interpret financial data. And what does that actually mean?
Yes. So from my experience, I've seen a lot of people not having the knowledge of finance and accounting, and that affecting both their personal lives in a big way, and ending up with lots of borrowings, even in terms of their credit cards or even bank borrowings. And even in terms of their work or business, where entrepreneurs fail to understand the very basics of finance and accounting, and then they tend to make wrong decisions, and that leading them to, you know, wrong investment decisions, wrong pricing decisions, and then eventually leading up even to bankruptcy. I've seen a number of businesses, both in Dubai as well as overseas, where people who don't have the knowledge, basic knowledge of finance and accounting, you know, heading out that way, unfortunately. Whilst there are very few entrepreneurs, very, very few that I've seen who have a strong knowledge in finance and accounting, though not from a finance and accounting background per se, but who've been extremely successful. So this diverse set of people that I've seen is really what led me to write the book and get into the accounting for non-finance managers subject per se. So I thought, you know, at least I've got 18 plus years of knowledge, experience, and skills. Why not put this to good use? And I think during that COVID period, where it was also the toughest period in my life, I thought, you know, this is the time that I really need to give back to the community and do whatever I could in whatever possible way that I could. And it was, honestly, it was not initially about the money, about writing the book and earning that royalties. It was more about helping people and seeing how I can contribute to the society. And now that the book is doing well, thankfully, I'm looking at the next few areas of, you know, building out a course, the audible version of the book, and whatever other ways that I could help people with.
Yeah, that's fantastic. I love the fact that you're creating different formats, because different people learn in different ways, don't they?
Exactly. Yeah. Some like it more visual, some like it more audio-based, some like it just reading. So yes, you're right. Different people have different learning patterns and preferences.
So tell me a little bit about, you went from disliking reading to now becoming that best-selling author. There seems to be some similarities between, you know, your dislike of accounting and dislike of book writing to having amazing results. How did that make you feel when you achieved those results?
Yes, it seems like you've done a lot of homework on me. Yes, that's another area that I really hated. I never picked up a book at all, ever. And in fact, I'm writing about this story, you know, as part of a chapter in another book that is to be published over the next few months. But coming back to your question, yes, I hated reading. But then I think during that COVID period, where we had much less social engagements, we had to do something. I also have seen how passionate my son has been in reading, and I think that's come from my wife. And for some reason, I just picked up a book during that COVID period and started reading. I think it was The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, and that's a great book as well. So whilst I was reading that, I then got more interested, engrossed, and ever since, I think I've purchased maybe like about 50 different books on personal development and various different subjects and topics. And it's been a great passion since then. So yes, it's the transformation of life, hating accounting to loving accounting and being part of my life now, plus hating reading to now loving reading, or even, you know, following these courses and continuous learning. So yeah,
it's a real credit to you how you've turned it around, and you've turned this, I guess, this issue into a real strength of yours. And it seems to me in many conversations that I've had, Shahan, that the COVID period seems to be the embryo for amazing things to be happening. Now, tell me, you've got 13 chapters inside the book. Which one's the most important, do you think, for a novice?
For me, it's the last chapter, because it provides a blueprint for any non-finance manager, business owner to implement in their own organization. So it gives certain guidelines and areas to focus on. But to get to that last chapter, like I missed the first few parts in the accounting subject whilst I was studying, if you skip those through and go to the last chapter, it will sound like Greek again. So it's best that any reader starts from the first chapter, builds that foundation from the basic terms to, you know, a bit more in financial state, understanding financial statements, and then building further on that knowledge, and then getting on to financial analysis, budgeting, forecasting, management accounting versus financial accounting, and then heading into that last chapter. So that's what I would recommend, to follow the sequence in terms of how the book is structured and outlaid. I mean, I honestly purchased so many other competitor books. I took a look at so many other courses, and I understood so many different missing parts and the way the books were organized. So that's why I came up with this particular order sequence. And it was very thought I mean, it was a very thoughtful process that I had followed in putting up this book in this particular manner. So I'd suggest everyone, whoever purchases the book, to follow that sequence, and I'm sure you'll find it interesting and useful at the same time. So, and then that last chapter will come in super handy to implement in each of your organizations. Aside from the book, I've also put up a number of bonus resources that can be useful for anyone. I continue to add on resources. I mean, it's not just about the price of the book. I think the value of the book is what I really want to give. So maybe a 10x return, what I aim to ultimately provide. So I continuously add on bonus resources, like summaries in terms of the quizzes that I've got. I'm continuing to add a few more questions and answers so that people, whilst reading, they also carry back certain learnings, and they keep certain things in their mind and be able to implement them in their respective organizations.
Yeah, that's...
As well as personally, sorry.
There's certainly a lot to take in here, and within those 13 chapters. Is this a book, Shahan, that you would read front cover to back cover, or is it more of a guide that you can go back to and pick what you need at the time?
Front cover to back cover, but not all at once. I'd take a break in between. Probably chapter by chapter is what I'd recommend. But also, if there's someone who's studied finance and accounting even for their O-level, ordinary level exams, whatever, and forgotten finance and accounting, it could then be a guide to pick and choose certain areas that they could implement. Fantastic. Either way works, but I'd recommend going chapter by chapter for someone who is totally new into finance and accounting. But someone who's at least had some basic knowledge prior, maybe forgotten them now, and you could pick up certain topics randomly.
Now, as an author myself, I know that it can be one sort of a journey to go from that concept of having a book in your mind to actually seeing it manifest into reality. How did it make you feel when you knew you had finished the book?
It was totally self-satisfying more than anything. And my book has also been featured at a number of book exhibitions, both in the UAE as well as internationally. So I personally visited the Sharjah International Book Exhibition, and seeing my book prominently displayed there was extremely self-satisfying. Plus, when I first ordered the author copy from Amazon and it arrived, I can't explain that feeling. It's incredible. It's completely self-satisfying. It just reminds you of all those sacrifices you've made to get the book to where it was, and then subsequently reading all these 5-star reviews or 4-star reviews have been amazing. Majority of my reviews, thankfully, have been positive. As always, there'll be a few individuals who'll post something. I mean, probably not even a quarter of the book, but vast majority of them, more than 90%, have been 4 or 5-star reviews. So reading those and how it's helped them transform their lives, you can't explain these feelings. There was also one particular reviewer who had bought this book for somebody, and the feedback that he had got as a gift, he had bought it, and the feedback that he had got, he had shared it on Amazon as a review. Then there were a few others who had gifted it, but there was one other person who had gifted it to his wife, and she really loved it, and there was some great feedback like that. So all these put together, plus also the direct feedback that you get from your family and friends, It's completely self-satisfying. And me as a person, those who know me know that, I never, even from family or friends or even from my own siblings, I wouldn't ask anyone to post anything as a positive review just for the sake of it. I always say just post an honest review. So I think, so as a person who focuses on that and having received these positive responses, I'm completely satisfied with what I've been able to achieve. And plus, it also motivates me to achieve much more, to publish much more books and resources, and help those whom I can going forward as well.
Well, look, you're a true North Star. I think that many people that are listening to this call today, Shahan, would like to get their hands on a copy of this book, and also to learn more about you and get your audio book when that comes out and so forth. Now, tell us a little bit about your Money Master HQ podcast.
Yes, so I just started it a few weeks ago. In fact, I've just published only one episode so far. I have got the recordings of three other sessions that are coming up over the next few days. And I've got like more than 50 requests from various different people to be part of this podcast. So the response has been amazing and way beyond what I ever imagined when I started this, just as a hobby.
Yep.
And as another way, as an additional way of helping people and, you know, guiding them towards people who could also help them with whatever they need, in addition to myself, just personally. So whether it's mindset on money or whether it's the tools and the softwares or the resources or the worksheets that you need to update as a personal, as a person in, you know, managing your personal finances. So I'm looking at helping people in terms of all these areas. At the moment, I've started off with the mindset part. Like I said, mindset is everything for me. So the first maybe 1 to 10 episodes would be on mindset.
Yep.
And then subsequently, I'll be interviewing people on my podcast show on various other topics. But yeah, I just had Dave Albin as the first episode. I think that's I've got great responses on that episode already.
Yep.
And the next sessions are also going to be amazing. So I'd encourage anyone to keep an eye on the moneymasterhq.com website. I'll be publishing all those episodes there, plus on Apple Podcasts, Spotify. It's on all these places. So
fantastic.
That'll be cool. Yeah. It should be available.
Look, you know, if anybody's on the call today and you're listening to this, we're obviously encouraging you to go to moneymasterhq.com and check out all of this information. Now, just in closing, Shahan, where can people find your book? Can they find it on your website? Where can they find it?
Yeah, if they go to moneymasterhq.com, a link to my to the Amazon book is available there. Or alternatively, they could head on directly to Amazon and type in my name, Shahan Sharif, and they'll see all my books that are published there. And the book that in particular that achieved bestseller ranking is the book of Accounting Fundamentals, A Non-Finance Manager's Guide to Finance and Accounting. So if all that's hard to type, just type my name, Shahan Sharif, search, and then you'll see my book. You can access it there. It's available in paperback, hardcover, and the ebook at the moment, Kindle book.
Yep.
And like I said, the Audible version will be available over the next few weeks.
Fantastic. That's great feedback. Thanks again, Shahan. Now, if you're on this call today, you're interested in finance and accounting, of which we defined the difference today, this is the website you need to go to. I'll be making sure that the links are available to you. No matter where you listen to this call, you're going to be able to find the links back to either the homepage or the Amazon page to get this book. And with all that being said, Shahan, great call. Thank you very much for joining me on the show today.
It's been an absolute pleasure, Rick. Thank you for having me.
You